Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. We just recited a mantra. Therefore, know the Prajnaparamita as the great miraculous mantra, the great bright mantra, the supreme mantra, the incomparable mantra which removes all suffering and is true, not false. Therefore, we proclaim the Prajnaparamita mantra, the mantra that says, Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhisvaha. So, I'm going to talk about Prajnaparamita, also the first name in the women's lineage. The deity Prajnaparamita is called the mother of the Buddhas or the womb of the Buddhas. And wisdom is generally a feminine principle in Buddhism. So the wisdom sutras or the Prajnaparamita sutras are core texts of Mahayana Buddhism. And they have two main teachings. The nature of reality is emptiness, and how a bodhisattva realizes the path. And the first one, the nature of reality as emptiness, is considered really the most profound of our doctrines. And the Heart Sutra that we just recited is the most concentrated expression of emptiness that we have. But the Wisdom Sutras, there's about 40 of them, including the Diamond Sutra and a number of ones that we rarely discuss. But the Heart Sutra, as we know it, is the core or the heart of the perfection of wisdom in 8,000 lines, which is the oldest of the, probably the oldest of the Wisdom Sutras. And the Heart Sutra is considered kind of a composite or a pastiche of a number of texts, but we take it as the heart of this particular sutra. They've been around since about the beginning of the Common Era, a fertile time of transmission between India and China, and also a junction of oral and written traditions. And they're written almost entirely in pure Sanskrit, which was actually a fairly new language at the time. So the sutras, this whole body has been reduced and enlarged and reduced and expanded over and over again. And this particular, the Heart Sutra, has versions up to 100,000 lines long. And there's this old story that the 100,000 line sutra was too much for ordinary people to understand. Even the leading scholars of Buddhism at the time didn't understand it. So it was sent down to be in the Naga realm. The Nagas are dragon people who, they're half human, half dragon. Which half depends on the story. I've seen both. And they're very highly awakened creatures, and they took care of this and other wisdom sutras until about 400 years later when we were able to understand it and Nagarjuna went and got it back. And a lot of people, really take that at face value that these are mystical teachings and they're protected for us and given to us by non-humans, by beings from another plane. So there's the 8,000 lines, there's a 25,000 line version, a 20,000, a 10,000, 2,500 line version. Down 300 lines is the Diamond Sutra, which a lot of you know. And then all the way down to 25 lines, which is the Heart Sutra, which we just recited. And there's also a tradition that there's still a 10 million line version that the Gandharvas take care of, and a 1 billion line version that the king of the gods is hanging on to. Not sure when we're going to be ready for that. So the Heart Sutra is pretty unusual. It's unusual among sutras for sure. Usually, Subhuti is the traditional speaker or the questioner in these sutras, and here he's replaced by Avalokiteshvara. And it's a very rare thing for Avalokiteshvara even to be in a sutra, let alone to speak. Meanwhile, all the other bodhisattvas and the Buddhas, the Buddha and the Buddhas, are forming this silent presence functioning like the Dharmakaya behind Avalokiteshvara, for empowering the speakers. And it's very unusual because it's almost entirely in the negative. And it's really easy to misinterpret that. I know I did. I misinterpreted it for many years. We can't talk about emptiness except in a very limited way. So we have to be very careful when we do, when we try. When we talk about emptiness, we tend to make either negative or positive arguments about it, or use negative or positive images for it, which is a way to claim essence for emptiness, to make rules about it. The Heart Sutra is the emptiness of emptiness. Those negatives in the Heart Sutra are called diamond cutting. They cut through everything. So this know this and know that is saying this too is empty. It's not this, it's not that. This too is empty. Don't get attached. Don't hang on. It's not saying no existence. It's saying existence is emptiness. There's one teacher, another word for emptiness is shunyata. So one teacher says, for one whose point of departure is shunyata, even the claim that all is shunyata is absurd. For non-assertion or non-maintenance of a position is the real meaning of shunyata. That's a very challenging statement. You can't even say everything is empty, because that's making a claim about emptiness. It's giving a quality or a criteria to emptiness. In the Wisdom Sutras, it's said that if you know this truth, if you know total negation, the emptiness of emptiness, you are a world knower, meaning that you know the nature of the world and you can move freely in the world. You don't have to cling to the idea that you're one who knows. You don't even have the idea of knowing. There's no one to see, yet someone sees. There's no one to act, yet someone acts. The emptiness of being. And that's the way that it took me a while to really get this, but that the Heart Sutra is also saying yes. It's this enormous yes of this and that, this too, you too, here too, everything, yes. Nothing left out. So, of course, a sutra like this is surrounded by stories about its magic powers. And there are a lot of magic powers for the Heart Sutra. One is that the mantra that we just recited is used to turn Mara away. And I want to come back to that. Mara is the god of illusion and delusion and temptation. I'll come back to that. There's an old Tibetan practice of using the Heart Sutra to exorcise demons, to stop illness, to end calamities. Lots of complex rituals that use the Heart Sutra. In Japan, it is sometimes written on people's bodies as a protective mantra. And these are all ways of turning back malevolent forces, which is where we come to Mara. Most of our human misfortunes are egocentric. They're egocentric demons. And our suffering comes from our own and others' attachment and clinging, our pride, our resentment, our belief that things are real, our attachment to things when their essence is emptiness. So the formula is truly magic if it teaches us about the emptiness of the world. It will end our suffering by teaching us about emptiness. So what is a mantra? I'll get to Dharani's in a minute. Mantra means spell or magical formula. And by definition, they're sound. It's not written. You'll see this mantra breaks every rule of mantras. A mantra is sound, not written. It's not translatable. It's often considered sacred and usually secret. The shortest version of the Wisdom Sutras, by the way, is the letter A. Ah, which is considered the primeval human sound. And it's supposed to contain, in that sense, it contains everything in the sutra. So mantras are not intellectual in any way. They're kind of pre-linguistic or proto-linguistic. And if they use human language, it's a deformed version of human language. Supposedly, according to the Upanishads, they arise from the ether. They're just uttered by the universe, in a sense, and act as a conduit for us. So this mantra that we just recited, it's one of the only mantras in a sutra at all. And it really upsets certain scholars because it breaks all the rules. It comes out of nowhere. It doesn't fit the structure of the sutra. It doesn't have instructions on how to use it. It isn't even clear what it's for. And after all this talk about emptiness, along comes this formula that supposedly is it, that contains everything. We've just said everything's empty, but here it is. It's all right here. Some scholars actually leave it off of the Heart Sutra. They just ignore it. I've always appreciated it when scholars just ignore uncomfortable truths. But it's supposed to hold the whole giant Wisdom Sutra, all 1 billion lines right there in the thing. So technically it is a Dharani, which is a long formulaic mantra. And we use Dharanis at different, we have other services that use Dharanis. Mostly they're in sensible language. They contain invocations and exclamations, and they call on the names of protector deities and so on. Because they're just supposed to be recited. Speech is more primeval, has primacy over writing. Sound carries a power. And because they're untranslated, they're kind of palimpsests, right? You can write your own meaning on it. They're wide open. Practicing with Dharanis forces you to just work with sound. It forces you to stop trying to put your intellect on things, stop trying to understand or explain things. And it would be said that they exert magic throughout space and time because they are recited by millions and millions of people every day and have been for a long, long time. So these sounds of the universe are just going out there all the time. We say the Litany of the Great Compassionate One at the end of the day. That is also technically a Dharani that's been translated. Ours is a very free translation. I've read a more literal translation and it's quite different, it's quite strange. Anyway, Jiyu Kennett did translate that one. So, Gyate Gyate Gyate, the supreme mantra, breaks all the rules. I originally learned it in English. It's not supposed to be translated. It's written down right there. It's barely deformed from Sanskrit. It's not secret, certainly not secret, except in one sense, which is not everybody gets it, right? There's an 11th century Indian teacher named Atisa who said, whether something is secret or not secret is a matter of awareness, not knowledge. So in that sense, the mantra is secret for a long time. It sure was to me. So think of it as an event rather than in a statement when you recite this mantra. Mantras are supposed to be sung or chanted or mumbled or whispered or murmured with great attention. The exact sound matters. Every sound counts. And we're supposed to really hear the sounds. So whether you understand the mantra or not, you can, for that brief moment, just really engage in the practice of just hearing it, saying it, and hearing it. But notice that the mantra is introduced with that word, therefore. So therefore, because of everything we've just said, all that has preceded it, all this teaching we have about Bodhisattvas, enlightenment, and emptiness of everything, the emptiness of emptiness itself. Therefore, Gyate Gyate, we go on, we have gone on, we've gone beyond. I will translate it for you in a minute. Indian scholars usually add om to the beginning. Om is a syllable that typically opens sacred formulas. It's like a doorway to a magic place. Very early mantra all by itself, om. It's called a seed sound. But it's a little like, listen up, gods. Listen up. Pay attention. We're about to sing a mantra. But it's also like the gods themselves are about to speak through us. Om. Gate comes from this root gam, which is to go or to understand. It should be gata, but that's like the only deformation of the language. So it's translated both as going and as gone. But the gone is a very present gone. It has gone, is currently gone, is in the midst of being gone, is right now gone. So it's very immediate, present. Padasam is beyond and complete. And then svaha. We don't do enough with our svahas. It closes the door that om opens, right? And it's common to end sacrifices and mantras with svaha. Eric Kahn's calls svaha an ecstatic shout of joy, the feeling of complete release. So it's hail, it's so be it, it's amen, it's done, completion, become it. It's like, so say we all. Make it so. It's this great. It's our amen. And it should be svaha. It should really be out there, right? So our translation, which you will encounter sometimes by Jew Kennett, is in the present tense. And that seemed really unusual to me for a long time, but I since found many other present tense versions. Going, going, going on beyond, and always going on beyond, always becoming Buddha, hail. She really liked her hails. She she was trained in medieval Christian music in college, and so hail shows up a lot. So here's a few other translations. Chogyam Trungpa, gone, gone, gone beyond, completely exposed, awake, so be it. Thich Nhat Hanh, gone, 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 all the way gone, everyone gone to the other shore, enlightenment, svaha. Allen Ginsberg, gone, gone to the other shore, gone, reach, go, enlightenment, accomplish. Like this Pure Land version. Oh, you have done, you have done. You have completely crossed the margin. This is enlightenment. Congratulations. Congratulations. There's an old Tibetan version. Proceed, proceed, proceed beyond, proceed far beyond, be founded in enlightenment. Dido Laurie just says, go, go, hurry quickly, cross to the other shore. And then Eric Kahn's, who is a scholar of many decades, gone, gone, gone beyond, gone altogether beyond. Oh, what an awakening. All hail. Oh, what an awakening. So in our lives of practice, we're going to chant this over and over and over and over. The Dalai Lama has asked exiled monks to recite it many millions of times, many times every day, every single day. So all our lives of practice, we're going to read this and chant it and hear it chanted. So we need to really listen when we do. In Robert Thurman's words, these wisdom sutras are, quote, accomplishing the impossible, expressing the inexpressible. And all of that is contained in these few words. I'm just gonna, this is a short talk. I'm just gonna end with this book. Mother of the Buddhas, Meditation on the Prajnaparamita Sutra. Wonderful Strange Book by Lex Hickson, who freely translated the whole Heart Sutra in very interesting ways. Like, for instance, O Shariputra, all structures of relativity without exception are empty of inherent self-existence, free from characteristic marks or limits, never created and therefore never destroyed, transparently pure, untouched by any conventional notion of imperfection, never increasing or diminishing. Then we get into ontological transparency after that. So, but this is how he does the mantra. O Shariputra, listen carefully to these syllabic sounds, which contain the entire perfection of wisdom. As a vast tree is miraculously contained within a small seed, this is the mantra which awakens every conscious stream into pure presence. This is the mantra of all mantras, the mantra which transmits the principles of incomparability and inconceivability, the mantra which instantly dissipates the apparent darkness of egocentric misery, the mantra which invokes only truth and does not acknowledge the separate self-existence of any falsehood. Tadyata gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisvaha. Pure presence is transcending, ever transcending, transcending transcendence, transcending even the transcendence of transcendence. It is total awakeness. It is suchness. And most versions of the Heart Sutra then have a closing section that we don't use. So I'm going to read, if you're familiar with a lot of sutras, they say what happens after the sutra has been recited. So I'm going to tell you what he says. During the pregnant silence, which follows this amazing discourse and miraculous mantric transmission of the full power of perfect wisdom, Lord Buddha comes forth from his blissful absorption and addresses Avalokiteshvara. Beautifully expressed and impeccably transmitted, O sublime celestial Bodhisattva, a child of the Buddha family should enter the unthinkable depth of Prajnaparamita in precisely the way you have indicated. The voice of awakened enlightenment rings out with such perfect clarity that members of this and every other Buddha assembly, as well as conscious beings in all world systems, are plunged immediately into the peace of universal transparency and the ecstasy of universal praise.
Right now you have the opportunity to make a comment or a question. If you're here in the room, you can go ahead and raise your hand and I will bring the microphone to you. And please say your name so we know who you are. If you're on Zoom, you can put your question in the chat or raise your hand and the host will unmute you.
Good morning, it's Reju. I've heard it said before, and you said it yourself, that mantras and dharanis are not translatable. And then you gave us like 8 translations. So I wonder if you can say more about that.
Well, this mantra is really unusual in that it's not deformed language. So some people would say it's not really a mantra because it breaks all those rules. It's just called a mantra a million times. So,
but what about like litany?
Yeah. So the other translation I found is by D.T. Suzuki. So it's quite old. And it talks about the blue-necked one and all kinds of stuff that is not in Gyukin. It's very free translation. But certainly you could do the what we call the litany of the great compassionate one as a chant, as an insensible dharani.
Dahishin, right?
Yeah.
So one way that I think about this, and I wonder what you think, is like what's being translated is not like word for word, but like gist or feeling tone.
And not just gist or feeling tone, but that of the particular person who's doing it, when this is supposed to be a universal seed sound rising out of the ether, in other words, attainable by all of us. And then a particular translation is just going to be one person's view of that. Mm. I think it's very useful to just do the Dharanis as sound for a long time. Experience that.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ginkgo. You gave a talk about this years and years ago that finally sort of translated this, because I'd always wondered, what in the heck are we even saying there? And I really appreciated having some sense of it. I will mention that I recall that Kyogen used to quote the Beat translation for this, which I've always kind of liked.
I couldn't find it. I was looking for it. There's this real hipster 50s Beat
it's
version.
It's something like, let's
go
see.
Cat, go.
Yeah. Go beyond, go way beyond.
Yeah.
And it ends
You're
with,
not there yet, baby.
And it ends with, ooh, mama.
Which is a great version of Svaha, I think.
I love
it. If it's saying, you know, so be it, so say we all.
Yeah.
Ooh, mama.
Or so mote it be, which is the, you know, the sort of pagan version.
Yeah.
I've actually used this mantra a few times in my life. At one point, I remember I was planning to move to the Zen Center, and I was like finishing up my job, and I was really not wanting to be where I was. You know, I was like, I want to be there already. And I realized I have to be here, or I'm not going to be there. And I just started chanting this in my own mind, Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasangate, Bodhisvaha, and just kind of like, keep going, keep going, keep going. And so for me, that's one of the magical things that's really great. And I have also done this Svaha thing as a really wonderful exclamation. So I like it a lot, and I find it really useful, because that's in fact what we have to do. We just keep going and going and going, and as the days go on. Yeah.
And not just that we have to keep going, but that it's a reminder that you are already going.
Yes.
You're doing exactly what needs to be done right now. This is the whole practice that contains the whole sutra of the perfection of wisdom. It's just fine.
Yep.
Right now, right here, it's just fine.
Yep, everything's great.
Yeah. I'm Roka. One thing working with emptiness that helps me is thinking of it as the interdependence of all things, and new to me is going beyond and gone. Gone really resonates for me, and I think it would help me in my practice. I've been struggling with a recent breakup, and just wondering if you could say anything about the gone piece.
You know, I used to not like versions that were gone. I thought of it, that's the past tense and it's happening right now, without, and I missed the fact that there's a way that we want to be gone in our life right now. It's gone beyond all those expectations and qualities that we put on everything, gone beyond attachment, but also just the self falling away, the self sort of dissipating in this moment. That's a kind of gone as well. And this idea that it's just gone right now, you had just gone, you know, like every moment you have just gone. So it's not very different from going.
I feel like it's going to help me practicing with it, letting go. That,
yeah,
the word going beyond and gone.
Yes.
Remembering that.
And then we can say, congratulations.
Right.
Mama.
Ooh, mama. Thank you.
I saw Oren over here.
Hi, I'm Oren, just on a practical level. We have that book in our library.
Oh.
By the Buddhists. And also Allen Ginsberg was, of course, a beat poet.
Yeah, but his version is not the beatest of the versions.
Not the beatest. Thank you for your talk.
Hi, this is Alice. Thank you for your talk. So I've been chanting Lighthouse Sutras every day, And right now I'm actually reading Diamond Sutra. And as you said, I'm at this pretty negative state because everything is no. I mean, Diamond Sutra is even more no and explain more detail. And you mentioned at the beginning, now there could be a lot of yes. Can you say more and elaborate that?
Well, to say it's not this or not that is also saying it is this and it is that. This is one of the paradoxes we're given in Buddhism, is not one, not two, right? So to me, I had a big aha around the yes when I realized that accepting the emptiness of everything allowed everything to be. Change, this is a very loose translation of Nagarjuna, change allows everything to be. If nothing changes, in other words, if it wasn't empty, it would be static. It wouldn't exist. Nothing would happen. So emptiness, which is the lack of permanent separate existence or inherent qualities, allows change, which allows life. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, the negative is good, something better, but when I'm trying to hang on the good side, the positive, and then it will go too.
The other part of the negative is that we really need to hear that. We need to hear that a thousand times because we don't believe it. We want everything to have permanent existing qualities and to stick around. And, you know, that's the message we need to get is no. And after that, we can see the yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Julia. What is doing the going and the gone, and can the going and the gone be going and gone at the same time?
I would say yes to the second question, and I don't have an answer to the first.
Thank you.
Find your answer. Yeah. Suho, way back. Julia's getting her steps. Is there nobody on Zoom, or is that just the speaker view? Oh. Okay, I can't see anybody else.
So this is Suho, and I was thinking about what Alice was saying and what we've been talking about, this not, this no. And I've been working with this, I heard an explanation that usually we're working with this subject and object. We're working with this thing and then this other thing. And if we're willing to drop one, the other sometimes naturally falls with it. And so those no's a lot of times help us with the other thing that we might be struggling with. And that there's a kind of emptiness that when both of those things drop, there's something different that's available. So
right.
I just thought I'd
and
I say
that,
you.
That's part of that magic of killing the egocentric demons by really encountering your own emptiness that will kill those demons. Because when you fall away, the other falls away. One last call. Oh, one more up here.
This is Caitlin. And I've loved like that ending of like gate, gate, paragate for as long as like I've had a relationship with the sutra. But I also like I find it very ecstatic. I like knowing the meaning a lot, and I feel very drawn to that. And is that like a skillful starting point for like deepening into it?
Is ecstasy a good starting point?
Well, it seems a little reckless too, or maybe like a little hedonistic.
No, what was that? I read what Khan said, that it's, what does he say? It's, I can't even find it. But that it's an expression of ecstatic joy. It's a shout of joy. It's a shout of life. So I don't think you're going to be in trouble there. I think you'll be okay. And as my teacher would say, this too shall pass. So enjoy it. Okay, last call.